Joining us, the next part of our program is Sally Uzol. Sally Uzol is joining us by phone from Istanbul, professor of international relations and political science at Bilgi University in Istanbul. And he did study here in the United States and at Johns Hopkins University and went on to the University of California at Berkeley. He's the editor of Private View, the Journal of Turkish Industrialists and Businessmen's Association, and the editor of the Turkish edition of Foreign Policy. He is the co-author of Rebuilding a Partnership, Turkish-American Relations in a New Era. And we're going to be, of course, talking about the deadly Israeli raid on an aid flotilla en route to the sealed-off Palestinian territory that has created quite an international stir. Israel has been facing criticism from around the world. The United States, some commentators are saying, feels stuck between Turkey and Israel, and there will be more flotillas coming perhaps as early as next week or later this week. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Sally Uzol, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Can you tell us what exactly the motivation was and the planning that went into having that flotilla go to Gaza? What was the purpose?
Well, the purpose of the flotilla was to, I think, primarily to bring to the world's attention the plight of the Gazan Palestinians and to force Israel's hand by sending in these goods. And I don't think anybody expected they could get through, but they believed that this way they could draw attention to the Gaza siege and the plight of the Palestinians, yes.
Mr. Netanyahu was saying on our television yesterday that there really aren't very many problems with the Palestinians in Gaza, that they have everything they need.
Then he has a very, either very narrow definition of what needs are, or he is not getting proper reports as to the life conditions of the Gazans.
The boat was filled.
I mean, you can read any report written by any decent or reputable organization, and this is what you would get.
Mm-hmm. And have there been attempts to bring these kind of flotillas and unload the humanitarian aid before, or was this one the first?
Oh, no, there were attempts before. I think Peace for Gaza organization, which made this coalition with the Turkish organization IHH, has tried, I think, at least once, and they were not allowed to take their cargo themselves, but they were taken to Ashdod, and then the Israelis took their cargo and at least distributed some of it, I think, in Gaza. There was also a land convoy a few months ago that wanted to use the Rafah Gate in Egypt, and there were some incidents there as well. Therefore, what the IHH, the Turkish organization, which is an Islamically oriented organization, did was to actually provide more funds for Peace for Gaza organization, which is obviously not very well endowed.
Mm-hmm. The deputy foreign minister in Israel said that calls for Israel to apologize were ridiculous. He said that the flotilla activists had prompted the violence by attacking soldiers during the raid, and I understand there are videos now on both sides of this. What do you make of his comments?
Well, Danny Ayalon also said it was nonsense to ask for an apology when he rather ridiculously tried to humiliate the Turkish ambassador a few months ago. So we'll see how this one will end, because at the end of that episode, Israel did apologize, or he did apologize. The thing is, whatever the composition of the passengers may be, whatever the intentions of the passengers may be, whatever the relations of the passengers may be, Israelis chose to raid the vessel in the dark and attack the ship. Now, you might have expected pacifists to basically passively accept this. These guys didn't. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the Israelis tried to attack a ship militarily in the dark. There must have been other ways of stopping the flotilla. That's number one. And number two, they were 72 miles from their shores.
How long?
I really don't see how this can be explained away.
There is to be another flotilla either later this week or early next week. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, I guess now, because this appears to be such a PR disaster for Israel, everybody who had ever had the idea of sending a ship load of goods to Gaza will not try to do it, and it will be a lot more difficult to quell this than may have been the case before. Therefore, what this may lead us to is a reconsideration of Israel's siege policy, and perhaps the international community will have to intervene and find a way of making sure that the Gazans get appropriate supplies and that it is not abused or misused by the Hamas. But at the end of the day, you will have to deal with them as well, however unpleasant that may be.
Would you be calling for Israel to end the blockade on Gaza?
I think they should, because it doesn't serve anybody except for the Hamas. I mean, it does not. I mean, this is always the case with sanctions, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, those who are holding power benefit from it in several ways. They consolidate their power because they control smuggling, and there is inevitably smuggling. They get rich, and those who do legal businesses suffer from funds, from lack of business and all that. So it basically creates the opposite of the kind of situation you want to find yourself in.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some phone calls for you. We start with Russell on the road somewhere. Hi, Russell.
How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Well, my question is this. Okay, if it was anybody else besides Israel, okay, the UN would really, really be forceful on letting them do an investigation. But the Israelis seem to be so arrogant, they think they're above that. But I think that every country should be accountable for anything that their military does, okay? And the thing of it is, they killed 9 people, you know what I mean? I mean, and these were not soldiers they killed. These were just people, you know what I mean? So I just wanted to know what he thought about that, you know what I mean?
Professor Uzel.
Yeah, the Turkish government went to the Security Council immediately, and I guess there was hard negotiations with the United States. At the end of the day, we don't have a resolution of the Security Council, but we have a sense of the statement from the Security Council that that actually wants a committee to investigate the matter as well. And I think there will be a lot of pressure from now on for the United Nations Security Council to form such a commission and for it to inquire. And I think there will also be pressure within Israel to get to the bottom of this. Therefore, this time around, I suspect there will be an investigation.
And does the United States need to exert some pressure as well?
Does the United States need to exert pressure where?
On Israel, to make sure that there is a thorough investigation.
Well, based on the reports we have in the Turkish press today, it appears that the United States had to exert some pressure on Israel Tuesday night when the Turkish authorities told the United States that they would not accept the detention of any Turks, that until and unless every Turk was allowed to leave who was being detained, they would consider even cutting off diplomatic relations with Israel. And they asked for the United States to use its good offices to convince the Israelis that keeping any number of the detainees would not be an option as far as the Turks were concerned. And so the reports in today's papers in Turkey suggest that the United States behind the scenes at least managed to convince the Israelis or dissuade them from keeping some of the detainees.
John,
and all of them left.
John, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, instead of
creating all this confrontation. Why don't the people in Turkey take the position that I take, and that is that all the Palestinians, Hamas and everyone else, has no need for a weapon, that they should all just disarm, and if they have any complaints, I think the world would respect them the same way they did Gandhi in India and Martin Luther King here, that ultimately peaceful, nonviolent protest is the way for the Palestinians to accomplish anything. And to create these artificial confrontations are simply not the way to try to solve this problem.
Okay, well, I mean, there are two issues. First of all, the ships were, the ships carried people were from, I think, 33 different countries, and the Turks were the most numerous group among them. So this particular raid took place against a group of people who, to the best of my knowledge, did not include any Palestinians. The only Palestinian that I know was on the ship is an Israeli Knesset member. So she is an Israeli Arab, and she was harassed at the Knesset yesterday. As for the pacifist way of resisting occupation, the caller has something, has a point there in that the Palestinians didn't really try this for a long time. And now in the West Bank, the current prime minister is trying to spend the energies of the and the resources of the Palestinian Authority towards building a state, towards nation building, and creating circumstances so that development can take place. So at least in the West Bank, passive resistance, nonviolent resistance is there, and the Israelis don't know how to deal with it either, quite frankly. In Gaza, of course, the situation is different. That's a place under siege, 360 square kilometers for 1.5 million people, and Hamas is not your neighborhood Boy Scout club, obviously. But they also generally refrained from engaging in violence except against their own citizens since the Israeli war against Gaza in 2009, and it would be hard to convince them to drop their weapons, but that is, of course, a good way of, if you will, sending a message that your intentions are peaceful. I don't think it is likely to happen soon in Gaza anyway. In the West Bank, somebody's trying.
Hmm. Professor Uzel, the press here has been describing relations between Israel and Turkey as fairly warm. What would be your assessment of cooperation, lack thereof, between the two countries before this incident and how it may have been damaged? I don't know if it's irreparable damage, but damage since this incident.
Well, the Turkish prime minister said that this incident was a turning point, but he did make a distinction carefully. This distinction between the Israeli state, the Israeli government, or in your parlance, the Israeli government, the Israeli administration, current administration, and the Israeli people. And in fact, he addressed the Israeli people in his speech a couple of days ago and asked them to actually depose their administration. Now, the relations between Turkey and Israel have been pretty good, and there's been a lot of problems since the Gaza attack of 2008-2009, and relations have deteriorated considerably in the year and a half that passed, and this raid obviously did quite a damage and possibly irreparable damage to the tenor of these relations. And right now, the Turkish government is on record for saying that it will not deal with the current Israeli government, but it did not change. I mean, it did not. It has recalled its ambassador, but it has not stopped diplomatic relations with Israel. So we'll see how these things will evolve, but it will be very difficult to put Humpty Dumpty back.
Mm. Thanks for your call, John. We go to another John, Grand Rapids. Hello, John.
Hi. Just real quickly, I do have a bias. I cannot get the image of young Palestinian children out of my mind when they were celebrating on 9/11 other people's misery. I don't think that's the answer or the remedy to resolving this issue. But if this group, this flotilla, is on the up and up, why wouldn't they just tell the Israelis, here's the date, here's the time, come search. All we have is food. We're not going to resist. Why go about it the way they did if they're on the up and up?
Well, I think that, I mean, there was obviously a prelude to what had happened. These guys have expressed their intention. They put together the flotilla. Many ships started from different places. And even before they started moving on the sea, the Israelis told them that there would be no way the Israelis would allow them to bring this these ships, and that at best they would have to go to Ashdod. And in Ashdod, the Israelis would unload these ships and then take the stuff that they deemed appropriate to Gaza. But the Israelis also said that they would use any means available to stop them. Therefore, a confrontation was almost inevitable. And one of the questions that are raised in Turkey today is whether or not the Turkish government contacted the Israeli government to avoid such an incident. We don't yet have any clear answers, but I think this will be part of our debate. As for the Palestinian children's jubilation after 9/11, we have all seen these scenes. At one level, there is really no excuse for this. At another level, it is perhaps not the best type of message, but a message to the United States that perhaps now you can start empathizing with our pain. Again, this is not my cup of tea, but you've got to put things in context as well. You should also remember that in Iran, there was a vigil in Tehran, and there was also in Kosovo a vigil, and two very different countries with two very different populations.
Joining us this hour is Professor Sally Uzul. He is a professor of international relations and political science at Bilgi University in Istanbul, Turkey. We're talking about the Israeli Navy and the incident that it resulted in 9 deaths of taking on a Turkish aid ship that was headed to Gaza. And there will be more such ships, and it has caused, as our guest said, serious damage between the two countries. There are calls for a thorough investigation. The United States seems to be torn between the two countries because we consider both of them allies. We're asking what you think of this incident about the investigation. Is there a clear right or wrong here? And what role the U.S. should play in trying to get to the truth? A couple lines are open. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address, talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Following the news from National Public Radio, another of our historical programs will speak with the authors, the husband and wife history professor authors of Henry Clay, The Essential American. Back to phone calls now. Dick in Sister Bay is next. Hello, Dick.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you for having Professor Uzul on. I'm not familiar with his work, but I understand he's a foreign relations specialist of some renown. I wanted to ask a question. We, as he knows, the United States is quite often considered to have a special relationship with Israel. That's how it's normally described, that we're as one when it comes to policies affecting each other. Apparently, the U.S. Actually blocked in the Security Council a move to have an international investigation. They were the only no vote in the Security Council. So in his position as a foreign relations specialist, how does he see from his perch in Turkey, how does this kind of behavior on the U.S.'s part affect our position in the world when we take this this kind of position?
I mean, first of all, unless I missed something, and I may have, I think the United States did not want to have a Security Council decision, but there's a Security Council statement in which the United States worked with the wording and made it a rather... flippant language. You know, there are acts, there is no raid, but there are acts and as if it were coming from all places. But I think an investigative committee is recommended. And as I said earlier, I think it will be formed. Now, it is true that the United States is seen as the major patron and a very uncritical patron of Israel. And as General Petraeus said at one point, that perception and the fact that the Israeli-Palestinian issue never seems to, doesn't seem to go away, and the United States takes some responsibility for this in the eyes of those in the region and elsewhere, to that extent, the United States' credibility as a major and impartial power has been hurt. And the promises of President Obama's Cairo speech a year after it has been made have not yet been delivered, and this is also creating some disappointment and some disillusion. So that's how I see the situation. My sense is, though, that this particular and very, very unfortunate bloody incident did indeed bring the plight of the Gazan Palestinians into the spotlight, and I think everybody now recognizes that letting that problem simmer is not an option. It is not a good policy. Ignoring a problem is not a policy. And I'm rather hopeful that some measures will be taken in order to lift the siege and make sure that Gazans get appropriate goods that they need. And there will be mechanisms put in place so that the Israeli security, which is obviously important to them, is not going to be jeopardized. But that cannot be done unless the Israelis recognize that they are in a dead end.
Thank you, Dick, for your call. Anton from Madison. Hello, Anton.
Good morning, and it's a great show as always. Good morning, Professor. I would like to point out an interesting comparison between the situation with Israel and what happened with North Korea over the last few weeks. It's not necessarily your area of expertise, but to me just shows another double standard in the world community against Israel, and generally a kind of a dismissal of North Korea is just whatever they do is, well, that's just North Korea, and we'll let them do it, and we'll tolerate it, even though, you know, here we have in North Korea a sponsor of terrorism, an exporter of nuclear weapons and other weapons of mass destruction, maybe not nuclear weapons, but, you know, generally an exporter of military arms, a country that clearly is not our friend. And, you know, what happens when they attack their neighbor, you know, without provocation? Nothing really happens. They fall off the front pages pretty quickly. And here we have Israel that is defending a legal blockade that was approved by the United Nations, from what that's my understanding of it, that is our friend, one of our few friends in the region, obviously along with Turkey. And, you know, from what I understand, this flotilla was not a government-authorized mission. You know, okay, maybe you can confirm it for me. So here we have a number of private individuals, basically, or organizations floating their way into blockaded waters, and you know, without really having a visa, so to speak. So why is Israel being singled out in such a harsh manner when North Korea is given a free ride again and again?
Well, I don't know if North Korea is being given a free ride, but part of the problem, I guess, if it is a problem, is that you hold Israel to standards that are rather higher than North Korea. North Korea is a rather brutal dictatorship, which is an anachronism in today's world, the most closed-in society and country in the world, led by a dynasty, presumably ruling the place with the Communist Party and protected by the Chinese. There are the options available to the United States against North Korea are not really that great, especially given the fact that the South Koreans, who do suffer from North Korea's misdeeds, are themselves rather reluctant to take a more confrontational position vis-a-vis North Korea. So on the Israeli case, Israel considers itself as a robustly democratic country, that and claims that it upholds human rights as a supreme value and all that. And it is, of course, faced with the terrorism of Hamas, and it has been many terrorist acts have taken place against Israel and Israelis themselves. And it has a way of fighting this, which appears to me, at least, to be rather without results. And as I said earlier, the embargo imposed on Gaza does nothing other than consolidating the power of Hamas, which Israel presumably wishes to weaken. So I don't think Israel is being singled out. In fact, Israel has been widely protected, if you look at the history of the relations, particularly since 1967, by the United States. And even when it engaged in activities that one would not ordinarily be very comfortable with. But the main answer, the short of it, is that we do hold Israel to higher standards than North Korea. Whether it's unfair or not, I don't know. I just don't think so, because Israel says it belongs to the community of nations who consider themselves to be democratic and that uphold the rule of law.
Professor Uzel, thank you so much for your analysis. We appreciate your joining us from Istanbul.
Sure. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah, our pleasure. Professor Sally Uzel, International Relations and Political Science Professor at Bilgi University in Istanbul, Turkey. Well, that was a lively hour, wasn't it? Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. We're going to do history the next hour.